This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for April 2nd, 2009. I'm Amy Brown. Meredith DeFrancesco is away this week. Today on Radioactive, a bill that might bring green jobs to Maine and green technology, and good news for people who would like to see Sears Island stay green. A group called PEER, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, along with the EPA, have issued statements that should put an end to the Maine Department of Transportation's latest scheme for Sears Island. The Maine DOT is asking the Army Corps of Engineers to approve their request to preserve or restore wetlands on part of Sears Island in order to get credits that would most likely allow them to destroy wetlands on the rest of the island and build a cargo port. Although they gave no indication at a public meeting in Searsport last week, DOT and the Army Corps of Engineers had already received a scathing letter from the EPA criticizing the plan. The letter came to light yesterday as part of a statement issued by Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, another group that has submitted comments strongly critical of the plan. Taken together, these recent developments may have the potential to stop the DOT in their tracks. We're joined today by Kyla Bennett, author of PEER's letter, which also brought the EPA's concerns to light. Can you start by just saying a little bit about PEER as an organization?
Sure. PEER stands for Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, and we're a national nonprofit based in Washington, D.C., with offices scattered around the country. And what we do is we support and defend local, state, and federal employees who work in the government in the environmental arena.
And your position within PEER?
I'm the director of New England PEER.
So there are different branches around the country?
Correct.
What are PEER's specific concerns about the proposed wetlands mitigation bank for Sears Island?
Frankly, I think the Maine DOT's mitigation bank that they're proposing right now to the Corps of Engineers is a thinly veiled attempt to get sign-off on building a port on Sears Island. They've been trying for decades, and they've been turned down every chance that the federal agencies have had. And this is a way, I think, that they're just trying to sneak it in and say, well, look, we're going to do this wonderful mitigation bank, and oh, but by the way, we're going to put a port here. And it's just, it's the stupidest place to put a mitigation bank because there's very little opportunity for wetland restoration.
You cited some specific concerns about Maine DOT's track record as far as mitigation goes as well. Can you say a little bit about that?
Sure. I reviewed some of the reports that the Corps of Engineers had done on Maine DOT's mitigation sites around Maine, and virtually all of them had problems. Invasive species moving into the sites, which is very bad because plants such as purple loosestrife or other exotic species can actually take over and provide very little wildlife habitat. They had the wrong hydrology in some sites. They had ATV use, illegal ATV use on other sites. In some sites, they hadn't signed over the land to be preserved forever, so it was unenforceable. I mean, there was a problem at virtually every site I saw. So for them to say, we're experts, trust us, I frankly just don't. I mean, they were the ones who were responsible for illegally filling 10 acres of wetlands on Sears Island back to 20 years ago. So to have them say now, don't worry, we're going to take care of Sears Island, is just, it doesn't even pass the straight face test.
If they were somehow able to do wetlands mitigation and follow the plan and make it all come out the way that they say that they would try to do it on Sears Island, do you think that it would be adequate to offset the environmental impacts of a cargo port or other industrial development on the rest of the island?
Absolutely not. And in fact, I used to work at EPA, and the Sears Island case was one of mine when I was there. And one of the reasons that EPA and the other federal resource agencies, Fish and Wildlife Service and National Marine Fisheries Service, fought so hard to try to stop the port there was because of the overwhelming environmental impacts and basically the impossibility of mitigating for them. So for DOT to say, we're going to build a port here, and as mitigation, what we're going to do is save the rest of the island, it doesn't even begin to mitigate for the impacts that they're proposing.
So your recommendation to the Army Corps of Engineers is that they not approve the plan?
Absolutely. They should not approve the plan. To say that they're going to save 600 acres of the island and then put a port smack right in the middle of it is going to vastly reduce the quality of the preserved land. That island needs to be preserved in its entirety. It is an inappropriate place to put any kind of industrial development. It would be great for an educational center, for some kind of outdoor center where people could actually enjoy the land and the wildlife. It could be a state park. It could be a national park. But to put a port there and then say the land all around this port is going to be preserved and is going to mitigate, it's just stupid.
Along with your announcement about Pierre's letter that you had authored and sent along to the Army Corps of Engineers as part of their public comment process, you also attached the letter that the EPA had sent.
Right.
Heather Sullivan, chief of the Regulatory Division, the Army Corps of Engineers, was the person that this was directed to, and it was sent on March 18th, which means that unless there was some big glitch, everyone at the Army Corps of Engineers and the Department of Transportation would have seen this before the public hearing that was held last week in Searsport, although no one there made any mention of it. And that meeting was espoused to be a sharing of information, so that's a little bit noteworthy. Can you say a little bit about what's in this and summarize what they're saying, their concerns are?
Sure. I thought EPA's letter was great. I was very pleased with it. And basically, they said that by the same thing that I'm saying, that by putting the port in the center of the island there, it undercuts any environmental benefits of preservation of the rest of the island. I mean, you can't just say, okay, we're going to put a port here and everything else is preserved and everything else is fine, because that port, it has noise, vibrations, lights, pollution. All of that is going to impact the preserved area, and that seemed to be one of the main problems that EPA had with this proposal. The port itself is going to result in habitat loss, air emissions, stormwater discharges, water quality degradation, habitat fragmentation, and EPA was saying these negative effects will so badly impact whatever's preserved that it's just not the right place to put a mitigation bank.
They also cite concerns that of the land that was to be set aside in the conservation easement, very little of that is actual potential wetland or aquatic resource restoration. It says
right.
Approximately 2 acres at most?
Yes. One of the problems usually with mitigation banks, what happens is that either a state or federal agency or sometimes private landowners will create wetlands or restore wetlands from areas that are so badly degraded or even have been turned into upland. They will create wetlands or restore wetlands there, and then people can draw on those created or restored wetlands as mitigation for destroying them elsewhere. But in this particular case, there seems to be 2 acres or less of opportunity for Maine DOT to actually restore or create wetlands on the island. So the bulk of this so-called bank would be preservation, and that would result in a net loss of wetlands because, you know, just preserving other wetlands in exchange for destroying wetlands, you have a net loss.
So they're not creating anything new, and they also, EPA states concerns about the nature center that is proposed for the conservation area would be, according to the original plan, sited in a way that would not be beneficial to the wetlands that are existing?
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, it's a difficult situation because what happened years ago was that Maine DOT built the causeway to the island and filled about 10 acres of wetlands without the proper permits. So but for their illegal activity, there wouldn't even be a causeway to the island, and we wouldn't be faced with this because nobody these days would let them build a causeway to that island. It just, that type of permit just doesn't issue anymore. We know far more about the fragility of these ecosystems and the value of them. And so, you know, I don't think that they should be benefiting from their illegal activities in the past.
And when considering areas for a umbrella wetlands mitigation plan, they're supposed to be looking at the watershed of the effects and the entire watershed? How
yes.
is that supposed to work?
Well, what they should be doing is they should be anticipating where they're going to be filling wetlands, where they're going to need to fill wetlands. Let's say it's associated with a highway widening project or something like that. And they should be looking for a mitigation bank in the same watershed because the functions and values that wetlands provide are very localized. They provide flood storage. They provide water quality purification. They provide wildlife habitat. If you mitigate for wetlands in a different watershed, you still have the impacted watershed where the wetlands are being filled without any mitigation whatsoever. So you really need to keep the mitigation bank in the same watershed as where the actual impacts are going to occur. And in this case, they haven't really done that.
Now, what do you mean? Because they're saying they're going to be preserving things on one side of the island. They're not actually, I believe it was Dean Van Dusen of the Maine Department of Transportation said at the public hearing last week that, and I might be actually citing the wrong person, one of the people on the panel, one of the officials from either the Army Corps of Engineers or the Maine DOT said that a cargo port is not even on their radar screen right now, that they are just looking at this plan as it is. But as it is, and as people involved in this issue are looking at it, it clearly seems to be a plan to offset a cargo port on the rest of the island.
Absolutely. And in fact, in their prospectus, they actually have a little table that talks about what projects they think are going to be occurring that they can mitigate for using this mitigation bank. And they include projects in Lincolnville, Belfast, Sears Island, Stockton Springs, Trenton, and Bangor Ellsworth. And not all of those are in the same watershed. I think this is a very thinly veiled attempt for them to try to get a port on the island again. In fact, when they came out with their first prospectus, they didn't even give Sears Island as the site of the mitigation bank. They just said, we're going to do a mitigation bank somewhere, so approve it. And Pure wrote a letter and said, we know you're thinking about Sears Island. Just come out and say it. You need a specific site. They withdrew the public notice because they realized we were right, and they issued this one and said, okay, it's Sears Island. And, you know, again, this is Maine DOT's MO. This is what they do. They've been doing this for years, and they're going to continue to do it. They want a port on that island for whatever misguided reason, and this mitigation bank is just an excuse to get it done.
And you believe that the other places that they've listed as potential sites that would be this would be used to offset, like Ellsworth or Bangor, are just red herrings?
Those sites are where they're proposing impacts where that Sears Island would provide mitigation for.
Right. They're saying Sears Island would potentially provide mitigation for all of those on that list or any of that?
They said it's a sample that could possibly be used. So I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that this isn't the right way to go about doing a mitigation bank. They should come up with their list of proposed projects that they know that they're going to be needing, figure out what the functions and values that will be lost are associated with the wetlands, and then come up with a bank that can provide the most mitigation for the most projects. And Sears Island is simply not it.
Another concern that was raised by the EPA is the grass areas on both sides of the east side and the west side of the island, the dune grasslands?
Yes.
Can you say a little bit about that and why that presents a problem?
Sure. EPA believes that that's a habitat that should be preserved, and they're concerned that any kind of port on the island would degrade that area, and that there's no compensation for that at all.
And it's relatively rare,
yes,
that
it
type
is.
Of grass?
Yeah, they have 9 acres of this what's called dune grasslands, and they're only found on the shoreline of the island, one on the west side and one on the east side of the causeway. And if they're going to have a lot of traffic going back and forth, there's no buffer, and it's going to be compromised.
The EPA's letter also says that the dune grasslands tend to migrate over time, and that may what would that present in terms of a complication if there was any development on either side of the island?
They would need to ensure that the buffer zone was large enough to account for these potential shifts of the grasslands, and that's difficult to do because no one really knows which way they are going to shift. So, you know, I mean, again, the habitats that Sears Island provides are so wonderful and in some cases so rare. The eelgrass that's in the marine areas, the dune grasslands, the wetlands are very high quality, the mosaic of uplands and wetlands, the streams, all of that will be compromised by a port on the island.
So you sent along your comments along with this EPA letter and What's been the response? Have you had any so far from either DOT or Army Corps of Engineers?
I just received a very brief email from the Army Corps of Engineers thanking me for my comments and assuring me that they will be taken into account, which, you know, I hope they are. There's a big push for wetland mitigation banks, and I'm hoping that the Corps will be able to stay steadfast and ensure that the first mitigation bank in New England is one that's worthy of their consideration.
Do you think with the very, very strong wording of both PIER's recommendations and the EPA's recommendations at the Army Corps of Engineers, that there's any chance that they will not deny the DOT's request?
I think it's a slim chance that they would deny it. I really do. I think it's a slim chance. Now, even if they do approve the umbrella mitigation bank, each draw from the bank would be done on a case-by-case basis. So one possible scenario is that the umbrella mitigation bank is approved as a concept, but that they're never really able to draw from the bank because there are so few opportunities to do so.
And now, isn't EPA involved in the next step of what would take place, and they're saying that they would not approve that?
I don't think that they have any kind of, like, veto power over it, if I'm correct. They just have
They're
concerns.
Just on the interagency review team?
Yep, that's
So the
correct.
Interagency review team can't do anything to stop it. They can just give recommendations.
That's right. EPA does have veto power over core permits, but this is not a permit per se. This is a approval of a mitigation bank. I'm not entirely sure of that point, but I'm pretty sure that EPA can't just nix this.
What does someone have to say to the Army Corps of Engineers to, I mean, sort of what type of information are they looking for in making their decision? Is there anything anyone could say beyond what's already being said that you think would change their mind in the process?
I don't think so. I think EPA's letter, again, was extremely strong, and they do listen to EPA. They listen to Fish and Wildlife Service and National Marine Fisheries Service. We're very fortunate in New England to have a very strong Corps of Engineers. Other districts around the country, they are not as protective of the resources. But New England has a very, very good Corps, and I'm hoping that they will listen to EPA's concerns and PIER's concerns. And the only other thing that could put a crimp in this is if we discover endangered species on the island more, or, the port proposal becomes more developed and it turns out that the impacts are so bad, as they were last time, that they just simply are not mitigatable.
So where does it go from here?
Where it goes from here is the Corps has to make a decision as to whether or not they're going to approve the umbrella mitigation bank. And then if it is approved, I guess what will happen is that everything else will be taken on a case-by-case basis as to whether Maine DOT can draw from this bank. Maine DOT would have to actually do the creation and the restoration of wetlands on the island, which, again, is less than 2 acres. And then if they fill wetlands elsewhere, they would have to ask the Corps' permission to use the created and restored wetlands on Sears Island as mitigation for that impact.
And the public comment period, has that ended? Was that the 31st?
Yes, it was. It did end on the 31st.
Is there anything that people can do if they want to have, if they're just hearing about this now and want to
call
have
your congressionals. I think you should call your federal representatives and senators, because unfortunately the Corps is somewhat politically susceptible, and, you know, honestly, Sears Island is the worst place to put a port, and it does not offer very much opportunity for wetland mitigation bank. We really need to drive a stake through the heart of this once and for all. I've been dealing with it since 1991. I know there are other people who have been dealing with it at EPA since the 80s. It really, we need to kill this project and preserve Sears Island. And if the state of Maine really does need yet another port site, let's work on finding an appropriate place for them to put it.
Is all the information, your letter, the EPA's letter, other documentation available on the PIER website?
Yes, it is. It's at www.pier.org.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. Is there anything that you want to add before we close, Kyla?
No, I think you've covered everything, Amy. You did a great job.
All right. Thank you very much, Kyla.
Thank you.
That was Kyla Bennett. She's the New England director of PEER, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Next up on Radioactive, we talk with Rob Brown, the executive director of Opportunity Maine, about a proposed bill to create jobs and green energy for Maine.
My name is Rob Brown. I'm the executive director of Opportunity Maine, which is a statewide organization working on issues of economic and workforce development state policy mostly. We are working on some pilot projects on developing career ladders for vocational education, community colleges. But generally, we work on or try and move forward the idea that investing in education and training for Maine's workforce is one of the better and more equitable economic development strategies we can pursue as a state.
And this has elements, it's called a Green Jobs Bill. It has elements of both energy conservation and increasing employment in Maine.
Yeah, it's known in the State House and the ether as the Green Jobs, Green Savings Bill. It's LD 1181. Essentially what it would do is create a comprehensive energy policy for the state of Maine, energy efficiency policy for the state of Maine that would require utilities and heating fuel dealers to meet a portion of their customers' future energy needs through efficiency as opposed to just consumption. And it also has in the bill a very comprehensive career ladder, workforce development system to help build the workforce that we need to get that work done. It provides substantial grants for homeowners and small businesses and industrial facilities. So it would be great for the mill in Bucksport, for instance, to help them go through a process which is a lot different for industrial facilities, obviously, than it is for a homeowner. But it really is meant to address in a comprehensive way both how do we make the state of Maine more efficient in the energy that we do use in all sectors of the economy, and how do we create the workforce that we need to get that work done.
I listened in on some of the public hearing in Augusta yesterday, and it was clear that there were a lot of people in the room.
Yeah.
Tell us about the turnout and who was represented.
Well, I would say there were probably 110 to 120 people there. Over somewhere between 40 and 45 people testified in favor of the bill. So that kind of turnout and that kind of enthusiastic testimony is fairly unheard of. In itself, but also, which was very impressive to the committee and to many of the observers, was just the breadth and the depth of the participants. There were just a lot of young people, a lot of business people, labor unions from around the state came, lots of people from all over the state. We had people there from every county in the state.
You sent along an email this morning that had a little breakdown of the math associated with how much average Maine homes cost to purchase electricity from conventional sources and what the shift would be. Do you want to comment on that?
Well, this is a major report that Opportunity Maine has put together. Really what we did is spent a little over a year researching workforce development programs in other states, particularly that were geared towards the energy efficiency or renewable energy sector of the economy, what worked, what didn't work, and we have compiled all that, in the first instance in this bill that we wrote, drawing on all of those good examples and good models. But we also developed this report, which we're going to release next week, which we're very excited about. And the math that I was pointing out to you was the value of efficiency and investing in efficiency as opposed to investing in new power generation or importing oil. And so the example that I gave was that it takes about $1 million worth of electricity to power 1,500 average Maine homes. You can generate that much power through investments in efficiency for about $300,000, and you're generating about six times as many jobs at the same time. So we can meet our energy needs in this state a lot more efficiently and a lot more cost-effectively by investing in efficiency. And by doing that, you're spending more money in the state rather than shipping it out of state, and therefore you're creating a lot more jobs.
Well, we'll certainly be talking with you more about this, but in the meantime, since we're just about out of time, can you tell people where they can go, what your website is, to get more information, and then also if they want to send in comments, where they would do that?
Yeah, you can contact me at rob@opportunitymaine.org. That's all one word, all spelled out. Our website is opportunitymaine.org. There's a lot of information on there about this bill and a lot of background information. Just let people know that this, you know, this would make Maine a model for the nation in how to do this and how to do it in an equitable way, in a way that creates jobs and career ladders for lower-income folks, particularly, or laid-off workers. And I would strongly encourage folks to contact their legislators. Many of many legislators in the area signed on as co-sponsors to this, so there's a lot of momentum, and it would be a big, bold move on Maine's part and make us a model for the nation.
All right. Well, thanks for talking with us today.
Well, thank you.
That's Rob Brown. He's the executive director of Opportunity Maine, and the bill that he's talking about is LD 1181. That's all we have time for today. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco. We're on every Thursday at 4, and if you miss a show, you can catch us on the archives, weru.org, along with all of WERU's locally produced news and public affairs programs. Stay tuned. Hightower's coming up next, followed by Free Speech Radio News, Democracy Now!, and a night of great music here on your community radio station, WERU.